What's going on, everybody? I'm Marah.
And I'm Tez.
And welcome back to Sisters Who Kill. The world of online dating gives you tons of possibilities. The possibility to spark a love connection, to meet somebody new, to really put yourself out there, especially if you're a person that doesn't put yourself out there a lot. When you're online dating, make sure that you follow some precaution because you never know who is on the other side of that screen.
Our players this week are Howard Sewell, our victim, Omar Savior, our accomplice, Christopher Hanna, our accomplice, and Tadesha Clark, our murderess.
Tadesha Betty Ann Clark is originally from Hampton, Virginia. Shout out to the 75. And she was born on November 29th, 1995. Now, in 2011, she moved down to Georgia because she was studying to be a mortician. She was actually taking classes at a local community college because this is something that she wanted to do with her life. Now, friends describe Tadesha as a smart person who never seemed like the type of person to be a follower. They said that she was one of those people that had a really bubbly, energetic personality. She kept to herself but was really open to people. When she moved down to Atlanta, she started going to the gym and trying to find herself a friend group. And she ended up meeting a guy named Christopher Dorian Hanna. Now, Christopher, he was born in 1987, and he was actually a personal trainer at a gym in Atlanta, and that's where they met, at the gym. They ended up talking, you know, seeing each other every once in a while, and they became pretty good friends. They had a solid friendship. Chris and her were living together. Everything seemed fine. And one day, Tadesha was out. She was at a park or something. And she meets a new guy. His name is Omar Rashid Savior. Now, Omar is originally from Pittsburgh. He was born in 1994. Up in Pittsburgh, he had a lot of criminal activity going on. He had been arrested for drug possession, receiving stolen properties. He had weapon charges. He had some pending cases up there. So basically, he came down to Atlanta just trying to start anew. He had family in Atlanta when he was there, but he wasn't really living with them. And I guess he knew people as well. He was pretty much couch surfing. My mans didn't have a home. He was homeless. So much homeless that that park that I said that they met at, she met him because he was sleeping on the park bench. And some way she said, wow, that nigga on the park bench, he fine. And I think he the one for me. We were only a few minutes in and you already are starting off on the wrong foot. So she's talking to this man and she's like, you know, you're so great. I can't even believe that you out here on the street, and I'm a hold you down type of girl. I ain't gonna let you just be out here. So she goes to her roommate, Chris, and she's like, hey, Chris, just met this guy. I think I'm in love. Can he crash on our couch? Or, you know, we got this sunroom in the back. Can he sleep in either one of those? And Christopher is like, sure. I don't see why not. You know, help a brother out when he's down. I'm down for that. And then Omar moves in with Christopher and Tadesha.
Tadesha and Omar, they were automatically up to no good and didn't have a lot of money at their disposal. So they decided that they was going to come up with a little scheme to get a little cash. So they decided that Tadesha was going to put an ad on Backpage and try and hook up with some niggas. And once she connected with these guys, she was going to invite them back to the house, and they were going to rob them. And so their first victim was going to be Howard Sewell. Howard Louis Sewell Jr. was born on May 29th, 1981, in Vicenza, Italy. He's not really Italian. His parents were in the U.S. Army, and they were stationed there when he was born. He is the middle child out of three. He has an older sister and a younger sister. His older sister is Kenyatta, and his younger sister is Faith. Kenyatta says that he was their little watchman. He would watch over them all the time, always comforting them, like looking for peace, as middle children do. Everybody loved Howard, though. He was easygoing. He was nice. They say he was always the person that was calm in the storm. He got into his 30s and he decided that he was going to move into an apartment with his younger sister, Faith. They stayed together in an apartment in Smyrna, Georgia. Both Faith And Howard worked at a salon, the Van Mitchell Salon in Sandy Springs. Howard was the housekeeper there, though. The other co-workers and members of the team said that he was great at what he did. He put a lot of effort and pride into his work. They said, quote, Howard was the MVP, and that was because he treated us like we were each a part of his family, and he was simply taking care of us. Made sure everybody's station stayed clean, stayed stuck. You need something, I got it. I'm going to help y'all do y'all job as effectively as y'all can by being on my shit, you know? But overall, he was just an outgoing, smart guy. Loved his family and his work. Even those people felt like his family, so he loved them too.
So Howard is doing what most people are doing. He's trying to meet new people, you know. He loves his family. He loves his work family, but he needs a little love of his own. So he gets on the apps, like most people do. He's swiping left, he's swiping right, and then he meets Tadasha. And their conversation is going really well. It seems like she's flirting with him. He's flirting back with her. And he tells her, oh, you know, my birthday's coming up. And she's like, oh, really? Your birthday coming up? You should, like, come hang out with me. And you can celebrate your birthday. And you can celebrate your birthday with me. And he's like, yeah, that sounds cool. That sounds really good. Like, his birthday was on that Sunday. So it's Sunday, May 29th. And this is 2016. And so he was supposed to have a birthday party with, like, his work friends and things like that. And he hits them up. He's like, hey, let's do a change of plans. Instead of having my birthday party on Sunday, let's just push it to Monday so that, you know, we can all celebrate then, because I got a little something to take care of. And they're like, oh, you got something to take care of? That sounds like a girl. It sounds like you got a date. And he's talking to his work friends. He just smiling like, yeah, stay out of my business, stay out of my business. So here it is. It's Sunday, May 29th. It is his birthday. His sister calls him, and at first, like first thing in the morning, and she's like, hey, brother, happy birthday. I love you. And he was like really sleepy at the time. She's like, what are you planning on doing today? He's like, I'm asleep right now, but I appreciate you. I love you. Thank you for calling me first thing in the morning. And she's like, okay, okay, okay. I love you. I will talk to you later. Call me back when you actually wake up. Cool. Then later on, his mom calls. He's a little bit more awake at that time. Hey, son, how you doing? Happy birthday. You're 35. So proud of you. I love you. He's like, thanks, Ma. She's like, what you got planned for the day? You big 35. He's like, oh, you know, cleaning up around the house, gonna relax a little bit. I got a date tonight, so I'm just gonna get ready for that. Make sure I got a little money in my pocket. And Mom was like, oh, okay. She didn't press him for details. He's 35 years old. She ain't got to press this her son for details about his date. So on that day, he ends up taking a taxi cab from his place in Smyrna all the way to Marietta, where Tadasha is staying. And when he gets there, he's like, hey, girl, how you doing? And they're flirting, they're talking, and they're chit-chatting. And it seems like they're really having a good time. Like, they're really enjoying each other's company.
They're chilling. Tadasha's trying to loosen him up a little bit. And then next thing you know, Omar comes out with a gun. He tells Howard to go to the back room, and Howard does. But once he gets in the room, they start fighting. Now, Howard, he a little man. This man is only 5'3". Well, he can hold his own. Omar, he's like 5'6". And Howard's like, ain't no nigga about to play me like no punk. So he starts fighting Omar, ends up knocking the gun out of his hand. So they're at it, going on, boom, 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 boxing or whatever, right? And Omar, little ass, couldn't take it. He's like, Tadasha, get the gun, get the gun. Tadasha's like, oh, shit. She grabbed the gun and she picked it up. They just sitting there rolling around fighting, and she just starts shooting. I don't even know if she's looking or not, just shooting. She ends up landing some shots, one being at Omar's arm and one in his leg, but Howard was also shot. Omar, he gets up, he grabs the gun from Tadasha, and he shoots Howard in the head, finishing him off. Somewhere around this time, police are called to the apartment complex, and the person who calls is like, hey, I don't know if I just heard gunshots or fireworks. So the police come out to the area, and they're like, I don't see any signs of somebody having a gun out here. We don't see no blood. We don't see no shell casings. So we're just going to go back on patrol. We're going to call it a wrap. So they leave. This whole time, Chris is in his room sleep. This nigga said he was drinking all night long. He was fucked up. He passed out in his room. So Chris is at home sleep. Omar bust in there. Chris, like, heard a couple of gunshots. Omar bust in there. He was like, yo, wake up. I need you to take me to the hospital. I've been shot. Chris was like, okay, damn. Get out of my room. Let me get dressed. He's a little disoriented. He just woke up, and our nigga's in his room talking about he got shot. He's like, okay, well, get out. Let me get dressed, and I guess I'll take you to the hospital.
Imagine the pounding headache. Like, if he was fucked up.
That was all I could really think about. Probably sobered his ass up real quick.
Whoa.
Because...
You go to sleep really drunk. You're already going to wake up with a headache. And then you get woken up by gunshots and people start screaming automatically. Yeah, I know my nigga's head was pounding. So Chris drives Omar to the Marietta Hospital because of his gunshot wound in the arm and the leg. And Tadesha went with them. And they asked Omar, what happened to you? Omar's like, man, my friend shot me. And they're like, your friend shot you? Okay, what's your friend's name? He's like, They say, you don't know your friend's name? And so they already knew that something was up. They talking to Tanisha and they don't really have a real name. Listen, you don't have to tell what happened to this police officer. You don't have to tell them the truth. And they don't really have anything to hold the three on. But they're asking questions like, how did this man get shot? And they're just kind of talking around the story. Okay, well, what car did y'all arrive in? They tell them. So the police officer decides he's going to go outside and look at their car. Looks through the window that ain't got no tint on it and sees that in the cup holder, he's like, is that the butt end of a gun right there? Dumbasses. And so the police officer goes up to Chris and is like, hey, there's a 9mm in the car. Chris is like, it ain't mine. Y'all can take it. I know that's right. It ain't my weapon. So
said, that shit ain't got nothing to do with me.
It ain't got nothing to do with me. Today she was giving them a fake name, totally giving the officers a fake story, but there was something going on here. Now, Omar, he had to stay at the hospital for that time, and he was released the very next day. And when Tadesha and Chris get back to the house, Chris is coming to the apartment like, wow, this was really crazy. And he looks and he says, yo, Tadesha, there is a body. Who is this on the floor? And Tadesha's like, yeah, I know that he's here. We was trying to do whatever. She was like, he dead already. I can't wait to embalm him. He's like, embalm him? Because, you know, she in school to be a mortician. So she tries to take some bleach, put it down his throat, you know, trying to embalm the body. I don't really know what the process of embalming a body is like, but I'm pretty sure it's not household bleach. I don't know. I'm not Googling. Y'all can. And tell me if I'm wrong later. And he's like, no, we need to get this body out of the house. And she's like, okay, that's fine. We gonna wrap up the body and we gonna take him somewhere. He was like, no. And she said, listen here, you see this dead body? Do you want to be just like this dead body? I didn't think so. So go get some tarp. Help me wrap this thing up so we can get rid of him. And at this point, Chris is like, oh, shit. I am in it now. So he helps her wrap up the body, puts the body in the trunk of his car, and then she's like, just drive. And they drive and drive and drive. And finally she's like, let's stop right here. He don't know where they are. She don't care. They get out. They pull the body out into this, like, lot. And she's like, okay, listen, this is what I have to do. We need to make sure, you know, this is still a person. So I'm going to set it on fire, but we just need to pray over the body, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And he's like, okay. So then she strikes a match, and she starts setting the body on fire. And Chris is kind of standing there. And then Tadesha starts dancing around the fire. And Chris was like, what is this girl doing? And she kept dancing around the fire. He said, this is some weird shit to me. I'm getting in the car.
And the whole time she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
You know, she dancing. She chanting. He's like, Not my God. And so he gets in the car and waits. He's just like, I got in the car and I just waited her to finish whatever the fuck she was doing so that we could ride back home. They go back to the house and they start cleaning everything. I mean, bleach and household products everywhere. When Howard fell, he landed on like almost like a piano bench. And so there was blood on that. They just took that, threw it outside in the back of the apartment and just start cleaning up everything. The very next day, Tadesha packed her bags and she was gone. And shit, Chris was like, I guess I better get all my shit and go too. Now, Howard, he lives with his sister Faith. And so when Faith wakes up the next morning on Monday and realizes that her brother's not there, she's like, what's going on? But grown-ass man, he can do whatever he wants, right? Then on Tuesday, which was May 31st, the salon that they work at calls her. And they're like, hey, your brother, he never came to work. Howard is a no call, no show. We had this birthday party for him. Like, what's going on? And Faith is like, that's weird. Very out of character. Why on earth would he no call, no show to his job that he loves? And so she decides she's going to call her brother. And she calls her brother. No answer. She calls her brother again. No answer. And she keeps calling and calling. At this point, she's like, my brother knows to answer my fucking phone calls. Okay? So after she realized that he's really not answering, maybe he's in danger, Faith calls their mom. And Faith is like, Mom, listen, take a couple deep breaths. I'm not trying to freak you out, but I've been trying to call Howard back to back. I have not seen him. I have not heard from him. I don't know where he is. His mom is like, you really do feel your heart drop. Like, it's a real feeling. She's like, I'm a mom. I know my son, and I knew that something was wrong, and I just knew it. And so when mom is like, okay, what we need to do, we need to go to the police. We need to make a missing persons report right now. And they immediately file a missing persons report. They immediately start making flyers. They immediately start asking questions to everybody. Hey, have you seen Howard? Have you seen Howard? Even the salon that Howard worked at, remember, that's the Van Michael salon. The Van Michael salon put up some money. It was like, we are having a reward for anybody that has information for Howard and his disappearance. The family's doing all this in like Smyrna, and the police in Marietta, they're not really aware of what his family is currently doing. And I mean, the family is doing everything. They had a picnic at Piedmont Park to celebrate Howard and to get the public's attention about Howard. And then in Paulding County, the police county sheriff's office phone rings. And it is from a dealership. Now, this guy works at the Chrysler Jeep, and he's like, hey, I work at the Chrysler Jeep over here, and a man just walked in, and he said he was walking his dog right across the way where there's like an empty lot, and he said that he found a dead body. And 911 is like, okay, well, can you tell us anything else? He's like, listen, I just need y'all to get here. I didn't go out and see it. I don't know if it's male or female. I don't know if it's black or white. I don't know anything. I just know that this man took his time to come across the street to find the first phone that he could to report that he thinks that he found a decomposing body. Police go out there, and he's very charred up, but they can tell that he is a black male, that he stands about 5'3". And even though his body is charred, but they can see throughout that he has one bullet wound in his left temple, and there's no ID on this dude. No driver's license, no credit cards, no wallet, no keys, nothing. Who is this guy? At first, the police is like, well, is it a mafia hit? Like, they just kind of left this dude, burned him. He's kind of out for dead with no ID. Is it gang related? What is it? With the police officers thinking that maybe it has something to do with the mafia or a drug cartel, they get GBI to help investigate. The GBI is coming in and doing what they need to do, and they're watching the local news, and then they see Howard's family doing a public plea for Howard's safe return. And the investigator is like, oh my goodness, the description of this young man matches our John Doe. And so the police officer reaches out to the family. They ask a lot of questions about what Howard looks like, his background, when's the last time you saw him, all the typical questions. And they're like, okay, well, we did find a body, and we want to see if we can do some type of DNA comparison. And I remember on the Snapped episode, Faith, his sister, is like, I was just like, please don't let it be him. Please. Like, she was like, I was pretty confident that it wasn't going to be him. Like, you don't want it to be who you're looking for. Your goal is that you always find this person alive. So on June 6th, the GBI conducts an autopsy. They find that this body was shot 4 times with a 9mm handgun. They compare the dental records of the John Doe to Howard, and then they have to make the devastating phone call to Howard's mom. They call and they're like, Mrs. Inman, are you all together? And she's like, yes, I got everybody. The family's here. We're all together. And he says, yes, ma'am. The coroner, they just got back into the room and they have informed us that the body we found is your son's body. It seemed like him and his sister were thick. She completely loses it. They were in the car and they had to like pull over the car so everybody could hop out and just cry. And everybody was hyperventilating. And mom is just so upset. Like, this is my only son. I got three kids and this is my only son. They took my son from me. They took my baby from me. Not only that, you're telling me that he was found somewhere in some grass, burnt up with a tarp, murdered, left, abandoned. It's a lot for them to all take in.
So the same day, the family gets a call from this random number. And a woman hops on the phone and she's like,
hey, I have a son and I'm pregnant. And I just know if it were my child missing and I was out there searching for my child, I would want somebody to come forward with information to help me find them.
So they're like, oh, shit, is somebody calling about Howard? So they call Faith's phone. Her sister Kenyetta says, put it on speakerphone, I'ma record it. So Kenyetta pulls out her phone and they like, okay, what's going on? She starts talking about how she has a friend who she heard talking about this whole little setup. So at this point, the anonymous caller is crying, Faith is crying, the family just wants answers. So the mom takes the phone. She starts talking to this woman and she says,
sweetheart, this is Sonia. I'm Howard's mother. I really need to know all that you know as to what happened that night. He's my only son.
After mama says her little prayer for this lady, and you know, she finally is able to give a little more information. She says her friend's name is Chris Hannah. Now, she never shares what her name is or her connection to Chris, but she was like, that's where she heard this story from. And y'all do with that what you can. Now, a few hours later, the family goes to talk to the investigators because, you know, now their brother has been identified. They get there. The family's talking to him. They're like, tell us about the last time you spoke to Howard. And it was like it was on his birthday. You know, I called, she called. We said the happy birthdays, but he never came home. We had a party planned. We had things planned. He just never came back from this. And Howard doesn't disappear. This is not how Howard acts, okay? Like, don't say maybe he didn't whatever, you know? The mom shares that he said he had plans to go on a date, but she's like, I don't have any information other than that. I didn't ask any questions. So then next, the family's like, well, while we're here, we just want to let you know that a woman called us today. She didn't leave a name or a number, but she said she had some information about Howard. Kenyatta plays the audio recording for the detectives. So the detectives are like, cool. At least we have a name to start with. We're going to look into Chris Hannah. It was June 6th when the police confirmed the body and the lady makes that call. So the very next day on June 7th, Howard's family creates a Facebook page, Justice for Howard, and hopes to bring attention to his murder, find the people responsible, keep the people updated with the case or whatever, right? On the 9th, friends and family held a candlelight vigil for Howard. Then investigators are investigating and they get in touch with Marietta Police.
And they're like, okay, we need to track Chris's movement through this whole ordeal. They locate an address for Chris's apartment. Now, once they find out where Chris lives, they realize that 911 calls came from that area on the 30th. The 29th to 30th, it's the wee hours of the morning. So one of those about shots being fired in that area. And of course, nothing came of it. But they're like, okay, that's a big coincidence for Chris. Then they find out that Chris took somebody to the hospital suffering from gunshot wounds. And I was like, okay, we've got more gunplay around Chris this same night. It's not looking good, not looking good. They asked the officer who was at the emergency room. And the officer is just like, they drove this car up the ramp. Three people got out. One of them had obviously been shot. He was like, they did not give a lot of information. We did get this car and this gun, you know, and seize it and take it back to the station. But they didn't leave names. They didn't tell a story. They didn't give us nothing. So the police is like, no problem. We're just going to go watch the security cameras and figure out who these people are. So at this point, they see that it's Chris Hanna, Omar Xavier, and Tadesha Clark. So next, the police go and put out a bolo for all three of them. You got Cobb County where Howard lives, you got GBI, and you've got Paulding County where the body was found. They're all trying to coordinate to figure out how all of this goes together exactly. They're digging deep into everybody. They see that Omar has a criminal history up in Pennsylvania. They can't really find an address for him. They're still looking for ways to get in touch, connect with him. They also run a background check on Tadesha, but she comes up with no record. She's clean. The police then start reaching out to her family and friends like, hey, you heard from Tadesha. We're looking for her in connection to a murder. And they're like, Tadesha? Murder? Are you sure? That don't sound like her. They're shocked. This is so out of character. The cops are even scouring the social medias looking for these people. They also decide to take a look into Howard's phone records. Now, from Howard's phone records, they find that he was in contact with Tadesha through Backpage. They see how Tadesha planned to meet up with him the night of his birthday. They also see that he reached out to a cab company early May 30th, took that cab to Roswell Road near Chris's apartment, and that was the last activity on Howard's phone. So now it's June 10th, and a search warrant has been executed on Chris's apartment. They got Marietta SWAT in there. They was like, we don't know what to expect. We're going to go in there. We're going to bust it down. We're going to take these people in, all right? SWAT line them at the door. They bust through, and they search him. And a few minutes later, they come out. People on the ground are like, what's happening? What y'all doing? And they was like, it ain't nobody in there. It ain't no furniture in there. It ain't nothing in there. Cops are like, what the hell? They go in there. The place has been cleaned out. It smells like cleaning fluid. It's practically empty. But they're like, okay, obviously they tried to hide something here. It smells really strong like bleach. But we're going to go through and see what evidence we can collect. So there were a few shell casings that were missed on the floor. They picked those up, bagged it. There's a couple of bullets that landed in the wall. They pulled those out, bagged it. And they also find this beat up piano bench right outside the house. And they go to it and they open it. And in addition to like 100 Rello wrappers, they find blood dripping down the bench.
I never understood why people save their Rello wrappers.
Like what? And they were not full. They were empty. Like these niggas really just like rolled a blunt and then stuck the wrapper in the bench?
Remember when people used to save their Capri Suns because they were making purses yes. and wallets out of them?
That's literally
it
like
was
right
giving
before
you were saving. It's giving that's what you were trying to do. Or you remember in college when people used to save their liquor bottles and mm-hmm. thought it was really cute decoration. Mm-hmm. That's what it's giving.
I'm like, why? It was literally just overflowing out that shit. Like, throw it away. Get a trash bag. You're done. From here, they've got a little blood. They've got some shell casings. And they've got a bullet that was lodged into the wall. So they take that back. Run some tests. They do confirm that the blood does, in fact, match Howard Sewell. Howard Sewell was shot with a 9mm, and that's what the bullets and the shell casings came from. It was a 9mm handgun. So the police are like, it's still ringing. Omar, Tadesha, and Chris. They are super connected to this death, and now we just have to find them.
So the police start looking for everybody, and on June 15, 2016, police are like, oh, Omar is right here. in jail, Cobb County Jail to be exact, because he went on there for like an assault charge, a simple assault charge. They pulled him from his jail, so they were trying to give him an interview, and Omar was uncooperative. And then when they started bringing up Howard and his missing person case and finding his body, Omar was like, I ain't got nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, take me back to my jail cell. Give me a lawyer. I don't have nothing else to say. And they did just that. They did say, okay, you have a right to a lawyer, but we are investigating this, and I do have a feeling that more charges are forthcoming. 2 days later, police are looking for Tadasha still. It's June 17th. They're still asking around her friends and family. Tazzy, what would you do if you got a phone call on this? Like, hello, ma'am. This is the DeKalb County Police. We are investigating Maral Williams in a homicide. We're just trying to find her whereabouts.
I'd probably tell them that I did not know where you was at, and I would be calling your phone and be like, what did you do? They're looking for you.
I didn't do it, I swear.
I'd be like, I forgot I had her location.
Take all the money out of the Sisters Who Kill account and get me a lawyer. So, obviously, her friends and family did what you said that you would do, and they're hitting up Tadasha, and they're like, girl, the police are looking for you. Like, what did you do? What? Why are the police looking for you? They are looking for you over in Marietta. And so she ends up hitting up the Marietta Police Department. She's like,
I heard that you was looking for me.
Well, let's meet and let's talk. So police are like, yes, absolutely. Let's meet. We definitely need to talk. They meet outside like some local businesses in a parking lot, open area. And they're like, all right, start talking. She's like, listen, Howard came to my apartment and we were flirting, and the intention was to rob him. Like, it was...
I ain't gonna hold you.
It was a scam from the get-go. We were just supposed to rob him. She's like, we didn't even have the intention to kill him. He was the first of what was supposed to be many scams for us to get rich quick. Because, you know, my man is homeless. And then she tells him, she's like, listen, Omar had the gun, and Howard... I feel like Howard did what any man would do. It's like, you ain't gonna shoot me. I'm about to overpower you. And Howard was getting the upper hand. Even though Omar was taller than him, Howard was still like a thick dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's short, but he stalky. You know what I'm saying? You know? So
yeah,
he's overpowering Omar. And when he's fighting Omar, overpowering him, the gun gets knocked away. And then she's like, I picked up the gun because Omar is yelling at me, shoot this nigga, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. She was like, so I just shot. I didn't mean to hit Omar, but I hit him too. And I hit him and I hit Howard. And then Howard is down and Omar comes and gets the gun from me, stands over this nigga and pulls the trigger to make sure that he was dead. And they're like, okay, well, what happened after that? She's like, after that, Omar goes through his pockets, taking everything that he could find, his wallet, his money, about $400. And then he wakes up Chris, and we take Omar to the hospital. And the police are like, okay, well, did you get any of this $400? She's like, I haven't even seen Omar since we dropped him off at the hospital. I didn't get none of that money. And they're like, okay, thank you for telling me this. Go ahead and turn around, hands behind your back, baby. You are going to jail, okay? As a matter of fact, we're charging you with felony murder, malice murder, and concealing a death. 2 days later, on June 19th, Howard's family was able to have a service for Howard at Brown Chapel Baptist Church. They did not have a body for the memorial, and it just didn't seem right. Like, why... this charred up body, he needed to be cremated. And to Howard's mom, like, that wasn't her son. That's not who her son was. That's not how he should be laid down. They really took that time as a family to celebrate his life. The detectives, they got 2 out of 3 ready, and they keep looking around and they keep searching, and lo and behold, Chris pops up. He's been booked on pandering charges at the local jail. So they're like, ha ha, I got another one. They go down and they interview Chris. And Chris is like, listen, I'll tell you what you need to know.
I wonder who he was pandering, himself or somebody else.
You think he was pandering himself? You think he was slaying it? I think he was pandering somebody else.
Listen, this nigga's out a whole apartment.
He had a job. He was probably pandering some of those girls at the gym. You know how they do.
Mm-hmm.
Chris tells them everything. From where he from, how he was raised, to everything that he remembers the night of the murder. he says that, you know, him and Tadasha have been friends for a few years. They recently became roommates. And this Omar dude, she asked if she could move Omar in, and he was all right. He said, it's fine. It seemed like this Omar dude made Tadasha happy. It's really not his business who makes her happy or not. And she was in a bubble, and it made her act like she, you know, cute and girly girl. And they became tight so quickly. Like, he really couldn't get his mind around it.
What's throwing me is apparently Chris was married. So there's an Abby Hannah, too. And I'm just like, how many people and random people?
I think Abby is the one that called.
I do not, because Abby is white. But it's like a whole lot of people up in this house, this apartment. The cops start to ask him about May 30th. Chris doesn't mention anything about Howard's death, but he does give details about how Omar was shot. He was like, you know, I was drinking, I was asleep, I hear gunshots, and then right after I hear gunshots, Omar's in my room saying, she shot me, take me to the hospital, I need to go to the hospital. I'm like, all right, man, chill out, just get out of my room and I'll take you to the hospital. And then Chris tells the police, like, I'm still a little, you know, fucked up from drinking. So I didn't really ask questions. I just knew I need to get him to the hospital. So he's like, so when I get there, you know, we drop off Omar at the hospital, and then me and Tadasha go back to the house. And he says, that's when I see the body in my apartment. So, like, this nigga left with one nigga with gunshot wounds just to find another one dead in his house. And he still has just woken up to this shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's like waking up to a bad dream. And of course, he's like, okay, Tadasha, the hell did you do? You already shot this nigga. You shot him too? Tadasha is like, ooh, I cannot wait to embalm this guy. He looking kind of confused. He was like, she mentioned something about wanting to pour bleach down his mouth, or that she did pour bleach down his mouth, or something like that. He was like, honestly, I just think she wants to play with a dead body. She's crazy. And then he starts to tell detectives, you know, low-key, I'm scared. Like, she making threats, talking about something. All right, you see what happened to this guy. You better help me. So, you know, I'm just doing whatever I can to get this body out of my house. So he helps her get rid of it. He says, together, they wrap the body up. They load it in the car. And they drive until Tadasha says, pull over. No particular place they talked about in mind. He just drove until she said stop. They stop. They get out. She says she's going to burn him. And then he's like, then she starts acting weird, dancing all around the body. He said, I just sat in the car, waited for her to be done. And then he was like, after that, they go to the apartment. They clean up. That morning, Tadasha packed her shit and she was out. And that's the last he seen of her. Of course, after this, they charge Chris with concealing a death. And he is sent back to jail. He was going back to jail anyways, but he was really sent back to jail. They also arrest a couple of other people, his wife, Abby Hannah, and Jonathan Wilkes. And it never is revealed in the story how they're connected. They charged him with also concealing a death, but nothing ever came of it. And so maybe they were just overreaching and then had to pull back with what they had and some information on. In addition to concealing a death, they also charged Chris with hindering criminal apprehension. On September 1st, Tadasha and Omar were indicted on charges of murder, aggravated assault, and armed robbery. Neither one of them were given a bond. They also charged Omar with burglary for allegedly breaking into Chris's house, taking the Xbox, and pawning it. So, this is why y'all let random people come stay at y'all house. Because he was never going to act good. Not only is he in here killing people, but you stealing through.
That's why when you were talking about your house being the pit stop.
The pit stop?
I was like, girl, when you were like, oh, I want my house to be like a pit stop where people can go just slide through. No, girl. I was like, don't do that. Okay. And people, you know, going to be like, oh,
I don't even
and my home
folks.
Girl, we're traveling through. Next thing you know, yo, shit going to be gone.
Not.
All right. Like, right. Your siblings only.
Abby, Jonathan, Chris bonded out. That's the last you hear of Abby and Jonathan. Their case didn't go any further. But up until then, they were all on house arrest. It took some time for them to actually get to the trial and stuff. I don't think they actually went to trial until 2018 or they even got to the trial portion of it until 2018. And so all this time, they're out on house arrest. Howard's sister on the Justice for Howard page actually writes out, and on January 26th of 2017, she leaves this message. She says, "Hi, everyone. I have to ask yet another favor because we've received bad news from the DA today in regards to Howard. It seems that the three that are on house arrest are out enjoying themselves while the trial continues to get pushed out until maybe next year. While I understand that these things take time, I do not comprehend why the three of them, Jonathan, Chris, and Abby, are still allowed to see the sun set and rise. The reason I'm posting this is Jonathan Wilkes was late to court today for the monthly trial calendar update that is mandatory for the three of them to attend. They made him take a drug test, and he tested positive for marijuana, and he's going to jail for 60 days. What a joke. They're out enjoying themselves while we continue to suffer without closure on Howard's brutal murder. I'm asking for help to ensure that these three go to jail until the trial and then after their sentence. Them being out alone is a slap in the face, but to top it off, they're out having access to drugs and a good time. I'm in utter awe and continue to ask myself, is this truly justice? We've been patient, but at this point, my mother and I have told them we need to meet with the DA ASAP. If the DA and the detectives can't do anything, we need to speak to the judge. I know that some of you people are in the justice system. Please help us reach out and ensure that everyone is locked up without the pleasures of seeing the sun set and rise." Like, she was like, "Are you out here getting high? And my brother's dead? Hell nah."
That would have pissed me off too. And then they still letting you out? And you're not back in jail.
And then on March 6th of 2018, Chris got busted for possession of weed with intention to distribute.
How are all of y'all out?
So everybody's not out. Omar and Thadesha are in jail. But the ones who were charged with concealing a body, so Abby, Jonathan, and Chris, they stayed out on house arrest. On April 9th, 2018, Thadesha has her pretrial hearing. She pleaded guilty to malice and felony murder and agreed to testify against Omar, whose trial was set for April 17, 2018. Omar was still claiming his innocence, and he decided he wanted to stick it out through trial, which got pushed out even more due to scheduling conflicts. By July 10th, he talked it over with his lawyers, and they was like, "Listen, you going down anyways, you might as well plead." So he ends up pleading guilty, too. The family's happy. They're like, two down, three to go.
The next one up is Chris Hanna. And on October 2nd, 2018, Chris decided that he was going to plead guilty. And let me tell you something. Howard's sister, Faith, she was going to make sure that y'all were updated about her brother. She went to her news outlet, social media, and she let everybody know, quote, "Hey, everyone. Today we are in court to sentence Chris Hanna. We learned about this date and time last minute because he decided to plead. In addition, he bought half a courtroom of people to support him, whereas it's just my mom, my stepdad, and me." Faith knew that this person was involved with her brother's death. All she wanted to do was go in, watch the judge sentence him, and be about her way. But Chris did come with the intent to fight for his life. He had about six people show up and speak on his behalf, talk about who he was as a person, give character witnesses. And this is very frustrating to Faith and her family because my brother is dead and you concealed his death. You wrapped up that body. You did not call 911. Chris was convicted of concealing the death, and he was sentenced to 15 years. He would spend 8 years in prison, and the rest he would spend on parole. And then he also got 10 years for that weed charge with the intent to distribute. His parole is set for 2024. Now, wife Abby and Jonathan, this guy named Jonathan Matthew Wilkes, like Tazzy said, they weren't mentioned too much in the case, but at some point they had house arrest pending the trial about the death of Howard. And they weren't mentioned by name in the Snapped episodes. You had to go into some news articles to find out that they were also charged with concealing a death. Sources say that Abby knew exactly where Howard's body was for days. And so because she never came forward to speak out telling Howard's death, she is just as to blame. Now, some people, Tazzy don't think it's true, but I think that Abby was the one that called the police.
I don't, because I think that lady sounds clearly black. And I think that lady sounds black on that other side of the phone. And Abby is white.
okay, so you act like you ain't never seen a white girl with a black scent. You've never seen a white girl with a black scent?
I don't even think... I think that lady didn't even sound like... the people who sound white with a black scent, they more sound like extra hood. I don't even think the lady just sounded extra hood. I think she just sounded black. Also, I think...
There's no way of proving it either way, but...
If she was getting charged with concealing a body, I would have, or concealing a death, I would have immediately got those charges dropped by coming forward with the information on that phone call. Like, I'd have been like, I didn't conceal it. I told the family, you know? And then, so then it's not a concealing death.
Well, I mean, she got charged, but it seems like they weren't found guilty, so... Who knows? Sources also say that Jonathan was charged at the time because they believe that he helped Tadesha and Chris when they were disposing of Howard's body after the fact. Once Tadesha stood in front of the judge to receive her sentencing, she received life in prison with the possibility of parole. She will be eligible for parole in 2046. Omar was also sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole, eligible in 2046. And like we said, Chris got 15 years, 8 to serve behind bars, and the rest on probation. If you're looking for them, let me tell you where to find them. Tadesha's at Pulaski State Prison. Omar is at Macon State Prison. Christopher, he was released last year, March 3rd, 2023, and he is on parole and serving the rest of his sentence on probation. Howard's sister, Faith, she is a solid rock, okay? And she said that she wants people to hear the story about her brother, Howard. She needs people to know that this is a cautionary tale. You have to be cautious of situations. She says, quote, if you're doing online dating, be very cautious. Your life is precious. You need to be careful. And that is the story of Tadesha Clark.
See, I told you on that bet.
All right, y'all, it's time for...
Well, I'm not black. I'm OJ.
I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how I would have got away with it. Number one, I didn't do it, but if I did. How you clean the entire house, bleach it down, fabuloso, do everything, and there are still shell casings that they could find on the carpet. Y'all didn't have a vacuum?
Girl, I'd have been cutting the shit out the wall and everything.
Exactly. I'd have been like, how many bullets are missed? How many shots were fired? We need to find that many shell casings, and we not leave until we find every single one. Even if the shell casings were there, you didn't have a vacuum. And then the bullet shell casing would have got caught up in the vacuum, would have made the sound, and you would have been like, ooh, a shell casing. Let's see if there's more.
I ain't do it, but if I did, I think putting the bench outside was not good enough. Clean up any blood, leave no blood behind. The fact that they opened that and it was just blood dripping, y'all weren't thorough enough.
Yes, absolutely. I didn't do it, but if I did, you know what you should have done once y'all realized that Howard had them hands and he was beating y'all ass? Just give him a clear path to run out, because that's all he was doing.
And that's literally what I was about to say.
That's all he was doing, was trying to leave. He would have ran out. He had his cell phone with him. He would have ran out. He would have called him a taxi cab, and he would have went back home. Y'all killed this man on his birthday.
And didn't give a damn.
And you knew it was his birthday.
It's fucked up, man. I ain't do it, but if I did, girl, if you wanted to play with bodies that damn bad, just wait till you finish mortuary school. The fact that you're over here being excited over his body, thinking that somebody would actually let you embalm them, and then you must have been failing because, girl, what was you doing with that body? Not disposing up.
I'm about to look up how to embalm. Because I know it's not with no bleach. I'm telling you, I keep searching these random, like, how to embalm a body. And I'm telling you, they are going to
listen. The thing is, search my computer one day. All the knowledge beforehand. You won't even need to Google when it's time for you to go to action.
Pump the embalming solution into the cavities.
She was so she just thought that
the bleach was going to be a nice embalming for you. Girl, I don't think that's how it works. You right, Tazzy. She must have been failing embalming school. Girl, come on now. They're going to put you on how to do... They gonna put her on dead people hair and makeup because you can't do nothing else. Clip their toenails and their fingernails and call it a day.
Her brother died and she was the only person who did her brother hair, so she braided his hair for his funeral. I was like, whew, that must have been hard. Mm-hmm. But she said it was actually really soothing to, like, have that last moment with him and make sure he looked presentable.
I know a couple of people that have gotten gigs of doing the deceased hair and makeup, and they say that it's your best client.
I've heard
client.
That they're the best client. I have heard that. But, like, it being your brother, like, whew.
Yeah. So I braided my hair. You have anything else?
I ain't do it, but if I did, I'm not picking up niggas from the park and asking them to move in with me.
Can we talk about it? You found this man on a park bench.
Girl, what?
And said, oh, he's the one. And then, on top of that, you seen Omar's mugshot, girl? It's a booger in his nose.
No, I gotta go
look. I know you seen that. That's a booger in his nose. I said,
and it's the way she went home and asked Chris for permission. It's giving. Can we keep him, please? Can we keep him?
So I braided my hair. Because that whole time I was watching that Snapped episode, I said, there is a booger in this man's nose. Please, Lord, go ahead and look it up. I'm looking at it again. So when I get arrested, please don't let there be a booger hanging from my nose. Somebody tell me something. This man ain't had no place to sleep.
This lady don't look like... I'm about to show you a picture of Abby. She looked like that's who he was pandering.
Oh, he might have been pandering his white woman.
I'm texting it to you.
Where you sending it to me?
Okay, you got it.
She looked like a ride or die. That white woman looked like she a ride or die.
She looked like, you know what they say about black guys.
All right, parole or no parole?
I do agree with Chris being able to parole. But they should need her head checked out. Now, all these people were fairly young. But Howard, if you're turning 35, what you connecting with these 21-year-olds for? Like, they ain't no good. They should need her head checked out. Omar was never going to be shit. It just went in the cards for him. That nigga fled Pennsylvania on some charges to come down here. Probably ain't even been here a whole month and already got into some shit. And while you on the run from one shit, you get locked up for some other shit.
Yeah, all y'all stay where y'all at. Life with the possibility. I probably wouldn't.
Damn sure not Omar. Omar gonna stay there. Not guaranteed.
I'm still not guaranteeing.
But I'll hear your story. I'll hear your plea. And then Chris already out.
But he better not get caught up in no shit.
Long time on probation, boy.
You
better
get your ass right on back. Sit down somewhere. You better go back to the gym. Thank you for being with us for another day. It's time to read some reviews so that we can go home because we got a show to do tomorrow. All right.
Somebody has said, I'm just waiting on y'all to say Paulding County. And I was like, well, look who we doing today.
This one is from one of our male listeners, DRB Draco. And he said, I need my girl to be documented on y'all next episode. She murdered our family friend, Buddy. I fear I may be next. Please send help. Lord. Buddy is like a gerbil. Buddy's a gerbil. I think his gerbil dead. So, F your girlfriend for killing your gerbil, bro. And you might be next, my man. She's trying to see if she gonna get away with it. So, y'all keep Draco in y'all prayers. Hope you alive next week, brother.
This one says, love y'all down bad. Came across my own TikTok and was like, let me give y'all a listen. As a black woman born in the 90s in Georgia, it is so refreshing to listen to people talk true crime the way me and my homegirls do. Love the stories that take place in Georgia because I swear I'm trying to figure out if I know somebody that knows somebody. Please keep them coming. Can't wait for the live show. Heart emoji. Hand heart emoji.
We have a live show tomorrow, so... I don't know. Are there tickets left? Maybe. Maybe not. I have no idea.
I'm hoping not.
I just know that I'm going to see y'all there. Unless you're a loser. Loser. Except for there was one girl, she had to give up her VIP ticket because she got a new job. Shout out to you. That's a good excuse to miss us.
It's a couple people having to give up their VIP ticket.
I'm like, y'all was first in line because VIP tickets, the day they dropped, they were gone by noon. Mm-hmm. I know y'all hurt, but it's okay.
We appreciate y'all anyways.
Mm-hmm, sure do. Live show is coming up. Those of y'all at the live show, guess what? Merch will be there. If you're not going to the live show, you're probably going to be jealous because everybody else was able to get merch. And they're going to be looking great. You can get a hat.
You can get a bucket hat, a dad hat, a sweatshirt, a t-shirt. You can get it all. You can get it all. You can get a sticker. You can get some rolling papers. You can get it all for a small fee. And you can let everybody know who you fucking with. Make sure if you go to the live show, Tazzy's requested that people wear their black and yellow and slash or yellow. So please do that. Crime Con is coming up. It is going to be at the end of May in Nashville, Tennessee. When you get your Crime Con tickets, if that is something that you're into, we will be on Crime Row selling merch there. So you can come and meet us. If you go to Nashville, Tennessee, you can see us. We will be there. We will be selling merch. We will be so excited to see you. And there are tons of amazing panelists and things to see if you are like one of those deep into true crime girlies. I recommend it for the people that are like deep into true crime. Amen. And when you do get your ticket, use the code SISTERS so that you can show your girls over here a little bit of love. Follow us, Sisters Who Kill, Sisters Who Kill Pod, Sisters Who Kill Podcast. You can email us, sisterswhokillpodcast@gmail.com. There's a Facebook group, public and private. You got to answer the questions for the private one so I know you're not a weirdo. And anything else, friend?
Talk to Sweet Talk Back.
See you tomorrow. All right, you guys, to end the show a little special, I will give you something that technically I was supposed to give you weeks ago. A very special, I didn't do it, but if I did, talking about an old case. Now make sure that you take your mind back to the Brittany Baxter and Taniqua Woodard case. Go back to a former episode, go back to the Instagram so that you can see about this case. And we have somebody very special and very close to Sisters Who Kill to give her very own, I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how she would have got away with it. Take it away.
Hey, y'all. This Krista, Taz's sister and a day one listener. Okay, so I'm talking about the Brittany Baxter and Taniqua Woodard case. I ain't do it, but if I did it, that's how I would have done it. Similar to the last time I did one of these, there are several key errors here that start and end with dating a bitch-ass nigga. And I'll give it to you. Maybe you did not know that he was a bitch ass nigga because you had only been talking to him for 2 weeks, which is a problem in and of itself. Not only did you move in with this man, but did you move towns? Like, you in a whole new part of the state. And no, this sis, it's giving lesbian. This is lesbian behavior. Put the U-Haul away. And I mean, shout out to the friend, I guess, for like being ride or die and deciding to come live with several strangers and your friend and her kid over in this next new place. But part of me is wondering why you ain't got no business, but I digress. Okay. So that was the first mistake. The second mistake that was made, which I gotta say, I feel two ways about it. Firstly, sis, why don't you know what diapers cost? Why are you showing up to the store? And I mean, we human, we make mistakes, but I just feel like you know what diapers cost. And so luckily there was this kind stranger with a wad of fucking money for whatever reason. That homie really fucked up on that front. But with this wad of money that was able to help you, you gave him your real number, which Taz and Mirage already talked about that, so I ain't even got to touch on that part. But, you know, they was able to help you. But then you go home and tell your man about it for whatever reason. And he want to get loud. I feel like you should have checked that nigga. Like, if you so concerned about who I have to ask money for to get my needs met, how about you make sure that I have what I need when I go out? Ain't you supposed to be balling? Fuck you talking about? Like, but then the conversation takes a turn because now he's like, oh, we gonna rob this nigga. Oh no, baby, that red flag was worth about 10 red flags. Okay, we know how you get down, sir. We know that you be robbing and stealing, and that's your business. Clearly I co-signed because here I am living in your auntie house, so clearly I'm not too mad at it. But here's the thing, how I'm gonna put money on your books if we both locked up?
no, I'm holding you down from out here. I'm gonna be out here holding you down. But he was getting loud, and now it's starting to get scary. So, bet your sweet ass, I'd have been like, oh, yeah, ooh, yes, babe, we gonna rob this nigga. And I would have packed my shit and got the fuck out. Time to go back to mom's house. We are not in Kansas no more, and it is time to go home, okay? But that's not what you did. That is not what you did. You and your blind lean the blind ass best friend went to another stranger's house in a sketchy ass neighborhood, and all the things that we thought were gonna happen. This nigga played you. Whether he actually went in there and killed that nigga, or he just didn't show up and left you in a motherfucking stranger's house for some other shit to happen. Whatever happened, it's real sketchy. But whatever happened, you ended up being involved with a fucking homicide. And then you finally got the fuck on and went back home to your mama's house. Too little too late, but, you know. But when the police call, why are you so pressed to convince the police that it wasn't your man? That's no longer your business. This nigga is unstable. It's about you and your baby and best friend who is still here. So I'm really wondering, the way I would have went to the police and be like, I just met this person. They were very kind. They lent me money for diapers, and my man got real jealous, and I just left. I went to go hang out with this new person and my best friend. And then these two masked men came in there, and I'm not saying that it was my boyfriend, but I'm not saying that it didn't look like my boyfriend. And I just had to get the fuck because I had to protect my child. Why would I tell them about we had a robbery set up? Is there proof of text messages or anything like that? No. And you doing all this work, even after all this time, trying to hold this nigga down? Meanwhile, he telling the police, oh, no, I didn't rob nobody. I don't know nothing about that. Like, he sure did hang you out to dry and covered his ass. He like, I know I have a history of robbing and stealing, but I didn't rob and steal from this nigga. Now you look dumb and got some stupid ass story, honey. And unfortunately, you learned your lesson the super hard way. And I hate that it had to end like that. But what is the moral of the story, children? Stop dating bitch ass niggas.